We're holding on Pezayin Omid Beis, the second line of the wide lines. We're in the middle of as follows. We were talking about the din of Zaken Mamre, a distinguished Talmid Chacham who disagrees with the national Sanhedrin, and for that he can be Chayiv Misa. And we said, according to the mayor, in order for him to be Chayiv for that, it would have to be that he's arguing with the Sanhedrin on something which involves on some issue that would involve something that if it was done b'mezid, a person would be Chayiv Kares, and if he does it b'shogeg, then he has to bring a Chatas. Of which there are 36 or 43 such mitzvahs, depending on how you count them, basically, whether you break certain ones down into other ones. So we said, so now that we had brought a long braisa that gave a list of areas in halacha where the Zaken Mamre and the Sanhedrin might conceivably be arguing, and we said each of those we learned from a phrase in the pasuk that he could be a Zaken Mamre for it. So now we were trying to explain, according to the mayor, how each one of those things ends up resulting in something that involves kores and chatas. So for example, we said that we said, for example, that one example is if they argue about the time of year during which you can declare a leap year. So how would that involve? Kores is because depending on their argument is when Pesach is going to be, and Pesach, a person eats chametz on Pesach, is chayav kores. And we were going through systematically like that, each thing mentioned in the Braisa, where either the thing itself involves kores, such as if they're arguing on dinim and hilchos nida or something, or where it's something that will bring to something, which can bring to something, etc., which eventually winds up to something which is kores and achatos, for example, where they argue on something which winds up in dinim momenus, so therefore it involves in the question, is money changing hands over here? Is money that's in somebody's possession, does it validly belong to him, and therefore can he use it for Kiddushin? If he can use it for Kiddushin, then it means that now the woman that he's Mekaddish is an Eishes Ish, and therefore there's Kores involved if she commits adultery, etc. So the Gemara continues, Nige Batim, where do we have an example involving Tsaras of houses, which was one of the things mentioned in that Braisa, where they could be arguing that would lead to something that's Kores? So for example, Beplugta, Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, Rabbanan. Let's say they could be arguing at the same machlokas that we later on find Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon and the other Chachamim arguing about. D'tnan, we learn in a Mishnah. Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon Omer, La'olam ena bayis tomei, a house can never become tomei with tzaras, even if it otherwise meets all the other criteria. Unless you can see that the tzaras spot is the size of at least two grisin. A gris is a type of bean. It comes up in Hilchos Nida, among other things. The poskim nowadays have an argument what the size of it is, ranging anywhere from approximately the size of a dime to approximately the size of a penny, or give or take a little direction, a little bit in either direction. So he says the tzaras spot has to be at least the size of two grisin. Al shtei avonim, it has to be on two stones. So part of the spot on one stone and pour it on the other. B'shnei ksalim, those two stones have to be on two different walls, two different adjacent walls. B'keren zavis, in a corner. Okay, k'shnei grisin v'roch b'kegris, the minimum length of the spot has to be at least two grisin, and the width of it has to be at least one gris. Now, the point is, it's very unlikely that that's going earlier in the Masechta, we learned this as well. It's very unlikely that you're going to have a tzaras spot in exactly that position and exactly that minimum size, etc. And therefore, in short, according to Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon, it's very unlikely that a house is ever going to become tamei with tzaras in the first place. And the Gemara points out, my timer, Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon. Why does Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon say that? Because he says, "Ksiv kir uchtiv kir rois." Because the pasuk mentions that you find the tzaras on the wall in the singular, but then it says, "Bekir rois," on the walls, plural. So he says, "Ezehu kir shulka kirois," which wall is like two walls? Heviem is a keren zavis. You have to say a corner, and therefore he says it has to be part of it on one side, and the other on the other wall, and then the other on the other side. Now the point is, let's say, for example, that you have a house which has a tzaras spot not in that exact configuration. Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon would say that it's not tzaras. The Chachamim would say that it is. Now, let's say a person goes into that house, which a house with tzaras makes a person tamei when he goes into it. He becomes tamei immediately. His clothes become tamei if he stays a certain minimum amount of time in there. So now, let's say he does that. He goes in there. And according to the Chachamim, he'll be tamei. And according to Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon, he will not. If now later on he goes into the Beis Hamikdash, is he going to be chayav kares or not? According to the Chachamim, yes. According to Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon, no. So there you go. There you have a machlokas that can involve something involving kares. Okay, nige begodim, where do we have something involving tzaras of clothing? What would be an example of a machlokas that could lead to something that's chayav kares? So beplugta, d'rab Yonason, menav Tumus, v'rabbanon. Rab Yonason, it says over here on the side, it should really say Rab Nosson, whatever. There's some machlokas of Rab Yonason or Rab Nosson, benav Tumus and the Chachamim. The Tanya, we learn in a braisa, Rab Yonason or Rab Nosson, benav Tumus omer, minayim l'pricha b'begodim shehi tahora. How do we know, he says, that if a piece of clothing becomes entirely covered with saras, that it's tahor? Now, we know that's the case by a person. A person comes to the kohen originally with a spot of saras, and he's going to be tamei. And then the saras spreads and covers his whole body. Then the Torah tells us he's tahor. So now, how do we know the same thing is true as far as clothing? So he says, Nemer karachas v'gabachas ba'odam, because the Pasuk says, by a person, it uses the word karachas and gabachas. The context over there, it's talking about when a person goes bald in the back of his head or the front of his head. So first it says that the falling of the hair itself is not considered that it doesn't make him tame. It just means that he's going bald because of old age or whatever. But then the pasuk describes that if on that bald area of his head now there appears saras of the kind that you find that you could find elsewhere on the body, white or pink, etc. Then he'll be tame. So it uses the word karachas and gabachas over there. Gabachas means the front of the head. Karachas means the back of the head. I had a fourth grade Rebbe who gave us a very funny way of remembering which is which. He said the letter gimel is close to the front of the Aleph Beis, the letter kuf is close to the back. Therefore, that helps you remember that gabachas is in the front of the head and karachas is in the back. Anyway, so it uses those words by a person. V'nema karachas b'gabachas b'godim. By taras of clothing, it also says karachas and gabachas. Now there, in context, Rashi explains that it means when the clothing is worn out, karachas, meaning like the back of the head is like the back, when the clothing is already old and worn, versus gabachas, the front of the head would represent like the beginning of the clothing's useful life when it's still new and fluffy. But in any case, the pasuk uses that same phrase over there. So malahalan porach b'kolei tahor. Therefore, says Rabbi Yonason ben Avtomos, we can learn exeira shava. Just like in a person, if he's completely covered with saras, then he's tahor. Afkan porach b'kolei tahor. The same way with clothing. If the entire thing is covered with saras, then it's tahor. Now, the Chachamim disagree with him. They don't learn that Gzeira Shava. So now, let's say a piece of clothing were to be entirely covered with saras. So now, again, if somebody took that clothing into the Beis Mikdash, or if he touched it and then went into the Beis Mikdash, would he be Chayiv Kores or not? According to the Chachamim, yes, because it's Tomei, and according to the Yonis and Menav Tormos, no. So therefore, so now you have a Machloikas that involves Kores. Okay. Next, we said in the Braisa, Divrei, the Gemara, the Braisa had been quoting and darshaning phrase by phrase the Pasuk in Parashas Shoftim that talks about the Zokin Mamre. The Pasuk starts by describing that when they have an argument in some area of Torah, and one phrase in the Pasuk had been Divrei, had been Divrei Rivois Bisharecha, matters of argument in your gates. So then the Pasuk says you have to go to the Beis Din HaGadol and ask them. So now the Braisa had said Divrei, the word Divrei in the Pasuk, Elo Ha'erchin V'Acharomim V'Hekdeshes, that refers to when a person declares an Erech, which is where the Torah tells us in Parshas B'chukosai that he says I pledge the erech of myself or the erech of Pliny to the Beis Mikdash. So we look up based on age and gender, and there's an appropriate amount that it says in the Pesukim there to pay. And charomim, which is a type of hekdesh, the hekdeshus and regular hekdesh. So now the Braisa had said that again, if the Zokin Mamre and the Sanhedrin Gdolah are arguing on any of those things, then he will be judged as a Zokin Mamre and be chayev misa. So what are examples of machlokas in those things according to the mayor that can involve kares? So all of this was, we began actually on Pezayin Amud Aleph. Rav Huna Bar Chinina had asked Rava, how do we understand this braisa according to the mayor, who says that only if it's something that involves kares or not? So Rava had told Rav Papa, his Talmud, go out of the Beis Medrash and explain it to him phrase by phrase. So since then, since Pei Zayin Amud Aleph, and now continuing on to Pei Ches Amud Aleph, we're continuing Rav Papa's going through his exposition and his explanation of what the Braisa means. So, Erchin, Ha'erchin, would be plugged to the Rav Meir v'Rabbanan. They could be arguing, for example, in the same machloikas that later on Rav Meir and the Chachamim had. Ditnan, we learn in a Mishnah in Erchin. Hamarich pochas mi ben chodesh. Suppose a person declares, he says, I pledge the erech of this baby who's below 1 month old. Now, if you look in Parashas Bechukosai, it doesn't list an erech for below 1 month. You have from 1 month to 5 years, 5 to 20, etc. So what happens? Rameyo oimen noisen domov. Rameyo says that... The mayor says that he instead he won't pay the erchin of the person. Reb Meir says he won't pay the erchin of the person because there's no erech for a baby that age, but instead he'll pay the dummim. Instead he'll pay the value. In other words, as if this baby were to be sold as a slave, then you would pay that. Then you would pay that. Because Reb Meir holds, the Gemara explains there in Erchin, Reb Meir holds a person doesn't just say something completely useless. So if he's saying, I pledge the Erech of this baby, and he knows a baby that age doesn't have an Erech, necessarily he must mean that necessarily he must mean that he wants to pledge the dummim, the actual value of the baby. Where's the Chacham say what he said doesn't count for anything? So now, first of all, the question would be. So now you have, on top of that, you have machlokas, the mayor and the chachamim. So b'chlal, you have the question. So first of all, if he actually gives that, and so now is he obligated to give that money to the Beis Mikdash? So now if he were to use money of hektish for kiddushin, then the Mishnah mentions Masechta Kiddushin that if a person uses money of Hekdesh b'mezid for kiddushin, then it's valid kiddushin because when he takes it and uses it for that, then it means he now takes it into cholin, and now means he was over, and now it becomes cholin. But nevertheless, he was over on an aveira of using Hekdesh, as opposed to if it was b'shogeg, then it wasn't kiddushin because he thought that it was his. So now, is this money that he pledged to Hek is this money Hekdesh or not? According to the mayor, yeah, it would be hektish. Therefore, he can't be mekadesh with it. And according to the chachamim, he could be mekadesh with it because he doesn't have to pay anything at all. So now you have again a question that ends up involving something of dinim mamonis, which in turn involves kores because there's the question of whether the kiddushin over here is valid. Rashi mentions another possibility is also, let's say, for example, let's say he didn't end up paying, and now. So another example would be that let's say so now rather let's say he did b'shogeg. Let's say so now he used this money afterwards b'shogeg. Is he chayev an osham for it? Is he chayev an asham me'ilas? According to the mayor, yes. According to the chachamim, no. Well, therefore, is that korban a valid korban? Now, if a person were to bring the now if he were to bring this korban, and somebody else who's tummy eats that korban, would he be chayiv kores? So not a person is chayiv kores for eating a korban when he's tummy. According to the mayor, yes, because it was a necessary korban. According to the chacham, it turns out it wasn't necessary at all, this korban, because he never committed me'ila in the first place, because this money wasn't hektish, and therefore there's no kores for eating it. Next. So that would be a case with erchin again, which involves a which ends up involving a matter of kores. Next, Vahacharomim, where do we find the nafkamina as far as a cherem, where it could end up in a matter of kores? Beplugged to Rabbi Huda ben Beseder of Rabbanon. There you could have, let's say, they're arguing on the argument of Rabbi Huda ben Beseder and the Chachamim. The Tanan, Rabbi Huda ben Beseder. Now we have two kinds of cherem. You have what's called cherem lagavoya. Which means basically, so Cherem LaGavoya would be it goes to the treasury of the Beis HaMikdash. It's basically Hektish under another name. Instead of saying that this is Hektish, he says that this is Cherem. It goes to the treasury of the Beis HaMikdash, and they use it for whatever upkeep of the Beis HaMikdash they need. Versus, you have something called Cherem LaKoyanim, which is where it instead you can't now, unlike a Cherem LaGavoya, which is like any other Hektish, and you could redeem it. I mean, you can buy it back from Hekdesh. Cherem l'koyanim, you can't. You have to give it to a koyan. Once the koyan has it, then it's completely his money and his property, and he can do whatever he wants with it. But you, the Yisrael, have to give it to him, and there's no other alternative. Now, so there's machloikas in the also in Masechta Erchin. So if a person clearly says cherem gavoya, then fine. If he clearly says cherem koyanim, then fine. What if he just says plain cherem? What is cherem by default? So Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseder, I'm Stam Charom on the Vedic Abayis. Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseder holds that Cherem, unspecified, goes to the treasury of the Beis HaMikdash to use for the upkeep, to use for the maintenance of the Beis HaMikdash. So therefore, Me'ilah is going to apply to it. So again, we have all the same points as we said before, therefore. So you're going to have the nafkamina of if he's Mekadesh with that money, is it valid Kedushin? You're going to have the nafkamina if he brings a korban osham for the Me'ilah, is it in fact a valid korban? According to Rabbi Yehuda ben Seder, yes. Shenema, because he says, Kol cheirem, kodesh kodoshim, hu la'Hashem. The pasuk says, every cheirem is holy of holies to Hashem, which means every cheirem, meaning unless he specifically specified that it goes to the Kohanim, then it goes to Hashem. You have the place? Yeah, where's the Chum say, Chayram, unspecified, goes to the Kohen? Well, if it goes to the Kohen, Me'ilah doesn't apply to it. You have to give it to the Kohen. Until you do, you're not allowed to have Anah from it or anything. But nevertheless, Me'ilah, if he did end up using it, he's over on a lav, but or he's stealing from the Kohen, however you want to look at it, but he's not actually committing the issue of Me'ilah. Because Me'ilah only applies to the property of Hekdesh. Shenemar, and the Chacham say, because the Pasuk says, Kisdei HaChayrim, the Pasuk describes a case where a person sells a Sdei Achoza, a field that he inherited from his ancestors in Eretz Yisrael, where if then he gives it to Hekdesh, and if he gives it to Hekdesh and he doesn't buy it back before Yovel, then the Pasuk says it goes to the Kohanim who are on the who are whose Mishmar comes out, where during whose Mishmar Yom Kippur of Yovel comes out. And it goes to them. And the Pasuk describes it, Kisdeah Cherem, just like a field of Cherem, Lakoyen, Tiach was also, it will be the Koyanim's inheritance. So we see, say the Chachamim, that Cherem by default goes to Koyanim. Im Kain Matam Alam Kodesh Kodoshim Hu Lashem, then what about the Pasuk Rabbi Yehuda ben Maseder is bringing that it goes to Lashem? That's it, they say that just means Shechal Kodesh Kodeshim Val Kodeshim Kalim. It just means that it's possible to declare even Kodesh Kodeshim and Kodeshim Kalim, it's possible to declare them Cherem. Meaning a person can have, for example, an animal that he designated as a korban oila, and now he designates it cheirem. So what does that mean? You don't just give it to the kohenim; it's already mum and hekdesh. It belongs. It has kedushas aguf. It belongs. It has to be brought as a korban. It belongs to the bismikdash. It has to be brought to the mizbeach. What it means is, in other words, that it will depend whether he originally designated it as a neder or an adava. We know we have the distinction that a neder is a person says, Hare Olai, I pledge to bring this, to bring such and such a korban. Later on, he designates one particular animal to do it. The difference is that now with that, if that animal otherwise becomes unavailable for whatever reason for a korban, it dies, it develops a mum, etc., he's not off the hook. He has to bring another one because he said, I will bring a korban, meaning it's a choiv on him. Versus a nedava would be where to begin with, he said, I pledge that this animal will be a korban. Well, now, if that animal dies or develops a mum or what have you, that's it. He's off the hook because it was only this animal. Now, if he now, having this animal as a as an oila, as that he's going to bring as an oila, let's say, or any other kind of korban, if he says that it's going to be cheirem, if to begin with he had made a neder, then since he's on the hook to give it as a korban, no matter what happens to it, so it means, in other words, it's basically considered that he owns the full monetary value of the animal. In the sense, if such an animal is worth $100, if this animal right now were to die, he would have to take another $100 out of his pocket and go buy another animal. Therefore, now when he declares it cheirem, means he has to go give the kohanim $100.
Why can't you give the animals to the coin?
Because the animal doesn't belong to him anymore. It's an oila. It has to be brought as a korban.
What which one did you say first?
He said first oila. Now, having designated this animal as an oila, so the sequence of events when it's a neder would be, he said, on Sunday, he said, I'm going to bring an oila. On Monday, he took one of his animals and designated it as an oila to be to fulfill that neder. On Tuesday, he said, I'm making the same animal that I previously declared an oila. I'm now making it cheirem lakoyanim.
Can you do that then?
Well, that's the Pasuk is saying, the Chacham say, that's what we learn from the words kol cheirem, kodesh kodoshim hu la'Hashem, that yes, he has the ability to do it. The result is that now he's going to have to pay the value of the animal to the Kohanim. Because it's as if, basically, it's as if he's saying, it's as if he's pledged that I will give the Kohanim the value of this animal. Now, what if to begin with he did it as an adava? What about if you don't have? So on Sunday, he said, this animal will be a korban. And then on Monday, he says this and says now that this animal that I previously designated as a korban will be a cheirem lekayanim, will be cheirem plain, as the Chacham say. Then what he does is he pays the toivas hanah. What he pays the kohanim is, suppose a person had a chance to get an animal without having to pay for it and without having to pay the full value of it and bring it as a korban. A person certainly would want to have the mitzvah bring a korban. He doesn't necessarily want to spend all the money that it takes to buy such an animal. But if somebody were to offer him an animal at a discount, what would he be willing to pay to have that schus to bring a korban? That amount is called tovas hanah. That's the amount he pays the kohanim in that case. The point is, the Chacham say, so it's not that Stam Cherem is Lashem. Stam Cherem, when he says unspecified, this animal or this table or this money or whatever is Cherem, then the Chacham say it means Cherem Lakoyin. It means you have to give it to a Koyin. But
Like default, like default.
thing, yeah, by de unless he specifically said Chayim LaGavaya. But the Pasuk that Rabbi Yehuda ben Maseira brought, Kol Chayim Kodesh Kadoshim Hu LaHashem, teaches us that that concept of saying Chayim LaKoinim is able to apply even to an animal that was already previously designated as a korban.
So it actually has to give it to the base of Midrash, but he has to give it to
But he
everyone
has to give
else.
the Kohanim a certain amount, depending the value of the Tovus HaNa'ah, as the case may be, right? So now, again, so you could have an argument between the Zok and Mamre and the Sanhedrin on this case. One of them, so he declared Cheirim plain. Does it belong to Hekdesh, or does it belong to the Kohanim? That means, is it possible now to use it? So now, if he used it, if he now used that money or that whatever, so is he committing me'ilah, and therefore he has to bring an osham, and therefore now if somebody eats that osham when they're tamei, they would be chayiv kares, or does he not have to bring an osham, and if somebody ate it, they're not chayiv kares? So we're back to.
Because it wasn't us.
Because it wasn't an Asham, because it wasn't necessary to bring in the first place, because there's no Me'ilah, exactly. So there we have an example where they can be arguing on a matter of Me'ilos, on a matter of Cheirim, and it comes out to something that's Chayiv Kares or not, right? Next, Hekdashis. What do we have a case of Hekdash where there would be such a Machloikas? Beplugged to the Rabbi Eliezer and Yaakov and Rabbanon. You have a Machloikas of Rabbi Eliezer and Yaakov and the Chachamim that they could be arguing on. The Tanya, we learned in a Braisa, we learned this at the beginning of the Masechta. Rabbi Eliezer and Yaakov Omer, filu tsinoda shel Hekdash. Even if you have a tiny little fork of Hekdash, so a person, specifically a tsinoda, is a little fork that's used for spinning gold threads. The process of spinning gold threads includes a little fork-shaped utensil. So even something little like that, if a person donated it to Hekdesh and now he wants to buy it back from Hekdesh, or somebody else wants to buy it from Hekdesh, you need 10 people to evaluate the value of it in order to be able to buy it back from Hekdesh. Rabbi Lezman Yaakov learns it from a pasuk. The Chachamim disagree. At the beginning of the Masechta, they said you only need three people. So now, again, so let's say now you have it was so now a board of three people got together and established the value of it, and he went and bought it back from Hekdesh. According to the Chacham, that's fine. It now belongs to him. He can use it to be Mekadesh, a woman. And now if he uses it, there's no problem with it. According to Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, no good. It still belongs to Hekdesh until you have 10 people evaluate it. Therefore, Me'ilah will apply. Right. Well, therefore, so now. Again, he can't be Mekadosh, a woman with it, b'shogeg. And if he does use it, then he's chayiv a korban me'ilah. And there we go. We have things that bring to kares.
And also, he could be living with someone who's not even, no. If he's Mekadosh, a woman with it.
Once he's Mekadosh, a woman, then yeah. If she's Mezana, then yeah. Okay. Next. The Braisa on Pezayin and Aleph had continued Rivois, a word in the Pasuk in connection with the whole matter of coming to the Sanhedrin in the first place, has in it the word Rivois, which means arguments. And we said Zashka, this refers to an argument involving the giving the soita to drink, because that's Rivois, because the husband and wife had an argument in the first place, that's what led to this whole thing. And also a case of Egla Arufa, which again involved a Riv, because there was obviously how is this person lying dead in the field over there? There must have been two people got in a fight, he and another person, and the other person killed him. The Taras Metzora and the purification of a Metzora, because that also involves a Riv, because the Metzora was speaking Lashon Hara, and the person speaking Lashon Hara, and therefore he got Tzaras. So where do we have examples of all of those that can lead to a matter of kares? So the giving the soita to drink, that they can be arguing, for example, on what Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua argue on. The Tanan, Hamakan, the first Mishnah in Sota says, Hamakana le'ishtoi, when a man warn a husband warns his wife not to be alone with another person, Rabbi Eliezer Omer Makana al pishnayim, Makana al pishnayim. Rabbi Eliezer says you need two edim for the warning. Umashka al pi ed echad oy al pi atzmoi. When it comes to how do we know that she was secluded with this other guy, which now makes her a Sota, so you need only one aid, or even the husband himself can come and say that she was secluded with this guy, and therefore that kicks off the whole sota procedure. Rabbi Yeshua says you need two edim for the warning, as well as two edim for the
drinking.
as well as two edim for the drinking. So now let's say that you don't have two edim for the stira, for the seclusion. Now, if she says, I don't want to drink the sota water. Now, the din is, in general, once you have a sota, says that if she says at any point during the procedure, I don't want to drink, then she's potter from most of the time until it comes to the very end of it. She's potter from drinking. However, she will have to be divorced and will forfeit her ksuba. She won't get her ksuba payment. So now let's say, so now that the husband said, so now let's say you had one aid that she was secluded, or the husband himself comes to Beis Din and says that she was secluded. So now we're going to start the whole sota procedure. But what if she says, I don't want to drink the water? Well, according to Rabbi Yezer, she forfeits her ksuba, because according to him, you don't need two aidim for the stira. According to Rabbi Yeshua, she's still entitled to her ksuba. Now, what would happen if she were, now it's possible, as the Gemara talks about in Masechta Ksubas, it's possible for a married woman to sell the future value of her ksuba to somebody else. She can say basically, look, eventually when my husband, if my husband dies before me, or if he divorces me, I'm going to be entitled to 200 zuz or whatever it is. I'm going to sell you the future value of that ksuba. Now, the other person is taking a risk. If she dies first, then there's no ksuba payment. But if not, then and of course it's going to depend how well are they getting along, how old or unhealthy is he versus she, etc. So it's going to be a risk, but it's a potential
So
investment.
a discount.
Yeah. So now, right. So there'll be a discount. Now, so the question is, so now is that a valid sale or not? So now, if you say that she has a ksuba, then it was a valid sale. If he now takes the money, if he now, when it's time for the ksuba to be paid, if this third party person goes and grabs from the estate the value from the husband, from the estate of the husband, the value of, look, I bought her ksuba, therefore I'm entitled to X amount, is that money his or not? Now, can he be Mekadosh a woman with it, which is always the acid test of whether money belongs to you or not? And if he's Mekadosh a woman and she's later on, and then she's later on Mezana, is she Chayiv Misa? Is there Kares involved? There you go. That's how a machlokas about the giving the sota to drink can wind up leading us to something which is Chayiv
The
Kares.
drink part, I don't understand, because it's done with it in the Mishmidish, it's done with Kohanim, it's a whole procedure.
Yeah, but that doesn't necessarily involve Kares if they do
No, but
it.
drinking, you can't. So, you have to. There's always going to be more to people giving her the drink.
No. We're talking about the kinui and the stira. We're talking
That
about,
part I understand, the first part I understand.
So we're talking about the stira, the seclusion, that
Right.
she was alone with this other guy that her husband warned her against. How many aidim do you need for that?
I
According to Rabbi
understand.
Yezer, you only need one aid, or the husband himself can say that it was. According to Rabbi Yeshua, you need two.
But the
You
other
need two
part
aid.
we're saying about the drinking, which
That's what
I
we're talking about. What we mean, hashkas sota, means they're arguing, does she have to drink? Well, if she now says, I don't want to drink, does she forfeit her ksuba for that? According to Rabbi Yezer, yes. According to Rabbi Yeshua, no. There's no, she's not a sota in the first place, because according to Rabbi Yeshua, there were no two aidim to see that she was secluded. So therefore, the whole procedure of the sota never kicks off in the first place, according to Rabbi Yeshua. Okay. Next, Arifas Egla, that would be Beplug de Rabbi Yezer and Rabbi Akiva. You could have the Machlokas as far as the Egla Arufa, as far as the same Machlokas of Rabbi Yezer and Rabbi Akiva. De Tanan, in Sota, me'ayin hoyu moedidin, from what part of the body would they measure? We know the Torah tells us you have to measure to the closest city, and the closest city is the one that brings the Egla Arufa. So what part of the body do you measure from? Rabbi Yezer and Mitiburai. Rabbi Yezer says you measure from his navel, from his belly button. Rabbi Akiva, and Rabbi Akiva says from his nose. Rabbi Lezman Yaakov, says you measure from the place where he becomes, where a person is called a cholo. Usually, when a person is killed, means he was killed by a sword, by being beheaded, for example. Obviously, there's many ways of killing a person, but he learns based on a pasuk that the word cholo refers to somebody who was killed by a sword, mitzavore, which means that he was hit in the neck. So you have a three-way machlokas, what part of the body you measure from. It's sota over there. The Gemara shows how each of them learns from psukim and from various considerations. Anyway, the point is, again, so now let's say, for example, you have the body is almost exactly in the middle between two cities, but the nose is slightly closer to one city and the belly button is slightly closer to the other city. So now let's say the Skenim argue about which city the Sanhedrin has to go and measure and find the closest city. So they have the same machlokas. So now what happens is, so you have city A and city B. So each one, so now let's say because of this argument, each one goes and brings an Egla Arufa. Well, now the Egla, a true Egla Arufa is also Bahana. Once it was, the Gemara actually mentions elsewhere that as soon as it's brought down into the valley where the procedure is going to take place, already at that point it becomes also Bahana. And for sure, after it was already decapitated, then the corpse of it, the carcass of it, is also bana. So now, let's say you have, so now city A and city B, because of the machloikas, they wound up bringing two Egla Arufas. But no, that each one brought an Egla Arufa. But now, later on, somebody takes the carcass of this Egla Arufa and uses it to be Mekadosh a woman. Does it work or not? If it's also bana, it doesn't work. If it's not also bana, then it works. So now you have, therefore, machlokas regarding the Egla Arufa, which can lead to kares. Next, Taras Metzora, where do we have a case involving? Where do we have a case involving the Tahara of a Mitzvah, which can lead to a case of Kodesh or not? Now, an obvious answer is whether he's Tohar or not, or whether he can come into the Beis Hamikdash. But in each of these cases, as much as possible, the Gemara wants to find an actual attested machloikas, an actually known machloikas that we know about a particular point, where therefore the Zaken Mamre and the Sanhedrin might conceivably be arguing about it. In other words, with this whole thing that we've been going on now for a blot and a half, there are some of them where the Gemara didn't really need to go into that level of detail. Obviously, we're talking about, for example, Mitzvah. If he's Tohar, he's Tohar. If he's Tomei, then he's Chayiv Kodesh for going to the Beis Mikdash. The Gemara could have stopped right there. But with each one of them, the Gemara wants to find an actual example of a machloikas that they could be arguing about, a machloikas that we already know that Tanoim have, where therefore, in a previous generation, they might also have had that same machloikas. The Tanan, so therefore that would be B'plugta, so B'plugta did Rav Shimon Rabbanon. You would have, for example, the argument between Rav Shimon and the Chachamim about the Tara of Metzora. The Tanan, we learn in a Mishnah in Masechta Negoyim. Now the Torah tells us in Parshas Metzora that the procedure of making a Metzora Tahor involves, so he brings a couple of korbanos, one of them being a korban osham, and then the Kohen takes some of the blood of the osham and daubs it and applies it on his ear, on his right thumb, and his right toe, his right big toe. Within the ear tnuch, which Rashi defines over there as the cartilage inside the ear, so whatever, he applies it over there, and to his thumb, and to his big toe, on his right hand, his right side. Now, what happens? What if this mitzvah doesn't have a right thumb, or right toe, or right ear?
Why are they asking right?
What? Because it has to be the right, that's how the Torah says it. Well, that's what we're going to see. The Tanakhama says that's it, there's never any way of him becoming Tahar. We learned earlier in the Masechta, the Chachamim hold, we have to have, whenever the Torah gives us a procedure, you have to do exactly the procedure as it says in the Pesukim. And here, since the Torah says the right thumb and the right earlobe and the ear cartilage or whatever, and the right big toe, then it means it has to be those and there's no substitution. On the other hand, Rabbi Eliezer says you put it where the thumb or the toe or whatever would have been, where they were amputated from. Rabbi Shimon, and Rabbi Shimon says you can place them on the left ear or thumb or toe on your yotze. So now, let's say they have this person who's missing one of those three body parts. He comes to the Beis Mikdash to bring his korbanos and become tahor so that he can finally re-enter the Beis Mikdash or eat korbanos. And now he doesn't have his ear, thumb, or toe. Can you make him Tahor or not? You have this three-way machlokas, whether it's possible to. According to the Tanakhama, it's impossible to ever make him Tahor. Therefore, if now he goes into the Beis Mikdash, any time after that, he's going to be Chayiv Kodesh. As opposed to, according to Reb Shimon, if they put it on his left ear, thumb, and toe, then that's it, he's good. So you have a machlokas there of whether something that would involve Kodesh and Achatas. Now, Tosfos actually pointed out earlier that with a number of these things where we're talking about entering the Beis Mikdash, the problem with it is when a person enters the Beis Mikdash when he's Tomei, yes, he's Chayiv Kodesh if it was B'mezid, but if it's B'shoigeg, he's not bringing a regular Chatas. He's bringing instead a special kind of korban called a korban Olav Yored, which unlike a regular Chatas, which is always the same kind of thing, a female sheep or a female goat, here an Olav Yored depends on what he can afford. If he can afford it, it's a sheep. If he can't afford that, then it's two birds. And if he can't even afford that, then it's a korban Mincha. Now, Reb Meir had said that the case where a Zaken Mamre, where a person becomes a Zaken Mamre, is when he's arguing on something which involves Kores and a Chatas. So according to Rashi, you have the Kores over here, where's the Chatas? So Tosfos explained earlier in the Sugya, in a different connection, that they explained, let's say, for example, now this Mitzvah, or this person who was a Mitzvah and now maybe has become Tahor, maybe not, depending on the Machloikas, let's say now he touches a loaf of bread of Truma. Did he make it Tomei or not? If he made it Tomei, then it has no value or very little value. Now it may not be even a Shava Pruta. Now if the Kohen were to take that and be Makadish, a woman with it, it's not a Shava Pruta. As opposed to if we say that it wasn't Tomei, then it still has value. Therefore, we can be Makadish with it. So therefore, you have a Machloikas that winds up in something of Kiddushin, which again brings to Kohen.
Why say Kohen is not worse than a Pruta?
Because if it's Tomei, he can't eat it. If Truma becomes Tomei, you can't eat it. The only thing you can do is use it as firewood. So if it's a loaf of bread, maybe conceivably, but even then it may not be a Pruta. If it's for example, liquids of Truma, you can't even use those to burn in a fire. All you can do is bury them, really, so then or spill them out or whatever, then they're not even worth a Pruta.
You can't give it to animals.
No, you can't give it to now. Well, whether you can give Truma Tmeya to an animal, actually, I think there is a discussion of Rishonim about that question. But even if, yeah, it may not be worth a Pruta. Next. So fine, so there you have a Machloikas that could lead to something that's Chayiv Kodesh. Next. The Braisa and Pezayin Amud Aleph had brought the next word from the Pasuk in Parashas Shoftim that said Bishorecha, that you have an argument in your gates, meaning in your cities, and then the Pasuk says, then you get up and go to the Sanhedrin Gdola in Yerushalayim. So now the Pasuk says Bishorecha, and the Braisa had said Zeleket Shikhopeya, means where's the Zok and Mamre and the other Chachamim are arguing about a matter involving Leket Shikhopeya. So let's go through each of those and find where it can lead to something that's Chayav Kares. Leket d'tnan, we have like this, a Mishnah in Masechta Peah, Shnei Shibolin Leket, if a person drops two stalks of grain, then that's considered Leket and he has to leave it for the poor people. Shloisha, but if he drops three or more at a time, Einan Leket, then it's not Leket and he's allowed to pick it up. Shnei Omrin, similarly, if he forgot two bundles of grain, which is the mitzvah of Shikha, then it would be considered Shikha and he has to leave it for the poor person. Shloisha, Einan Shikha, and if he forgets three or more, then it's not Shikha. Va'akulan, in all those cases, in each of those cases, the two versus three is Beis Hillel. Beis Shammai says in each of those cases, three versus four. So in other words, if a person dropped three stalks of grain, according to Beis Shammai, it's considered leket, it belongs to the poor people. According to Beis Hillel, it's not leket, and he can keep it for himself. So the Rashi points out that in Sifra, in the Medrash Halacha, and on Chumash Vayikra, when it talks about these mitzvahs in Parshas Kedoshim, then the Sifra brings over there what the sources are, where we see where Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel get their respective opinions from. But again, the question is, well, does it belong to the Balabas or not, or does it belong to the Ani? So now let's say they drop three stalks of grain and the Oni comes and takes them, like Beis Shammai, but then the owner comes and takes it from him, like Beis Hillel. Well, who does it belong to? Who can be Mekadosh a woman with it? And there you go, there you got to something which is Kores and Achatas. So that takes care of Leket and Shikha. Peah would be Plugta de Rabbi Shmuel v'Rabbanan. You can have the Machlokas of Rabbi Shmuel and the Rabbanan. D'tnan, mitzvahs Peah lahafrish min hakama. The proper way to do the mitzvah of Peah is to set it aside while the grain or whatever kind of produce is still standing. So in other words, you don't harvest it and then give it to the poor people. The mitzvah of Peah is supposed to be you leave a section of your field, the end of the field, unharvested, and the Aniyim come and take it themselves.
They're not getting ready so they can eat to have stuff taken processing.
It's still right, but that's the mitzvah peah is supposed to be that way. Loi hifrish min hakama. What happens if he didn't set it aside while it's still standing? Yafrish min ha'omrin. Then he should set aside peah out of the sheaves of grain, out of the bundles of grain. Loi hifrish min ha'omrin. If he didn't do it even from then, from the bundles of grain, yafrish min ha'kri ad shelo merchoi. Then he should still separate peah from the pile of clean grain before he did miruach. The process of the whole processing of grain involves that involves so they go through many after they harvest it and they bundle it, then they do the you have all the malachas in connection with the Shabbos, dosh, where they thresh it to break the shells and then start the process of removing the straw and everything from it. Then you have the other processes to where eventually you have a pile of clean grain, just grain kernels without any of the straw or shells or any of that junk. Now, after that, once you have the pile is finished, then you do miruach, which is you smooth out the sides of the pile. At that point, it's considered gemar melacha. At that point is when the grain becomes chayiv and meiser. So now, you threshed and you winnowed and you did all the other melachas with your grain. You have it in a stack. Give payah from it at that point before you do miruach. Merchoy, what happens if he did do miruach? Ma'aser v'noisenloy. Then he still has to give peah from it. He still doesn't get out of giving peah. However, at this point, now he has to take ma'aser from it before he can give it to the oni because now it's chayiv and ma'aser. So Rabbi Shmuel, af mafresh mishum Rabbi Shmuel Amru, af mafresh mina issa. They said in the name of Rabbi Shmuel that even after that, even if he already went as far as making dough out of it, then he can still take a piece of the dough, the appropriate amount of the dough, and give that as payah. So now let's say he did that. So now let's say he took some of it and gave it as payah to the poor people out of his dough, according to Rabbi Shmuel. But now the other so now let's say again you have the Zok and Mamre and the other Chachamim are arguing about whether he needs to do that or not. Now, the Chachamim, the reason Rabbi Shmuel holds you should do it because, in other words, he holds, listen, you were supposed to give payah all this time, so it's not too late. The Chachamim take the view that once already it's been ground up and made into flour and baked into dough, etc., then you have a shinui. Now, at this point, the Chachamim hold, basically, it's considered that the balabas already has been koneh with a shinui, and now at that point, then it's too late to give payah from it because now it belongs fully to the balabas. It's considered that he stole it from the aniyim, but nevertheless, at this point, you don't make him give it to the aniyim. So now, again, the question would be, let's say that he took a piece of the dough and gave it as payah, according to so again, according to Rabbi Shmuel, it belongs to the Ani, and therefore he can be Mekadosh a woman with it. And according to the Chacham, it doesn't belong to the Ani, and it can't be Mekadosh a woman with it. So there you have where it comes out to a matter of Kiddush.
Because if you can once again, once it's dough,
Once it's dough, whether you still give payah from it anymore. According to Rabbi Shmuel, yes. According to the Chachamim, no. Tosfos, by the way, discusses over here why he would have to give. We said that if the pile of grain has been if that miruach has been done at that point, you'd have to give meiser before he gives the payah to the poor person. So Tosfos discusses why that should be. On the face of it, then. On the face of it, we should say the part that's supposed to go to the Ani is never chayiv and meiser in the first place. Why should he be required to give meiser for that part?
maybe the onions were lying on if you went so
No,
far.
because that's the point. Whenever you give payah to the poor person, it's payah is potter from meiser by definition. We learn from Pesukim elsewhere, the Gemara learns that anything that's hefker and anything that's given as matnas aniyim is potter from meiser. So therefore, so if you have now, let's say for example, al pi halacha, your payah has to be at least 1/60th. Min haTorah, any amount. That's why we say in morning davening, our payah va'bi elu dvarim she'en lahem shiur ha'payah, but midrabbanan is supposed to be 1/60th. So let's say you have over here. So let's say you have over here 600 saw of grain, let's say. So your payah is supposed to be 10 saw out of it. Now we're saying if you got so far as miruach, then you have to take meiser on behalf of the whole 600. So you'd have to take out, for example, 60 to give to the levy, and then you take out whatever, you take out two out of every 100. So you take out 12 or so, whatever, and give to the kohen, and then you take out one tenth of what remains at that point, which is about whatever 58 and change, and give it to the levy. The question is, why should you need to do that? You should first think, how much of it do we have to subtract for the Ani? We have to subtract 1/60th, which is going to be 10. And therefore, the Truma and Maaser that we give is figured on the basis of 590, not on the basis of 600. So Tosfos discusses that a little bit. There's the question of Yesh Breira or Ein Breira. Do we say that the 10 that he's giving to the Oni out of the 600 is, to begin with, this was retroactively, this was what was meant for him all along? Or do we say Ein Breira and it's not? So it would have to do with that. But either way, Tosfos says that, listen, the fact is,
It's not a punishment, really.
not a punishment, but it's just the fact
Unfortunately.
is it all belongs to him, and then the whole thing became Chayiv and Meiser, and now it doesn't become Potter, but just because he's giving pay after the fact. Okay. Then Tosfos goes on to discuss matters involving Truma over here, but anyway, yeah. Okay. In other words, the question is, why did it say Ma'aser v'nosin? Why doesn't it say Torah Ma'aser? He has to give Truma as well. So Tosfos discusses that point a little bit as well. Okay. Anyway. Fine. So there you go. So now we've gone through that entire brisa. Rav Papa has spent all this time since Pei Zayin Amar Aleph explaining to Rav Huna Bar Chinina how every single case, every single area of halacha that the brisa had mentioned, where the zokin might conceivably be arguing with the Sanhedrin, could make him a zokin mamre, all within Rav Meir's opinion that it has to be something where there's kares and achatas, because in every single one of those areas in halacha, you can have something which leads to something which leads to something which ends up to kares and achatas,
As we both together.
and it has to be right. Next, the Mishnah had said Gimel Bate Dinim v'cholo. The Mishnah had described that there were three Bate Dinim in the Beis Hamikdash complex. So the first they would go, there was one by the entrance of the first there was one by the end in the Har HaBayis, then there was one by the entrance of the Azara, and then there was the Sanhedrin Gdola in the Lishkas HaGozis. So we described how they would go first one by the entrance of the Har HaBayis, and if they couldn't resolve it over there, then they'd go to the one by the entrance of the Azara, and if they couldn't figure it out over there, then they go to the Lishkas HaGozis. Now, the Mishnah had gone on to say that so now if he argues with the Sanhedrin Gdola, so the Mishnah had described that he comes to the Sanhedrin, and each time they're saying kach dorashti v'kach dorshu chaver, right? This is what I've been davshining, this is what my colleagues have been davshining, kach limadti v'kach limdu chaver, right? This is what I've been teaching and this is what my chaverim have been teaching, and we can't resolve the argument between them, so can you resolve it for us? So now What's the basis of the argument? On what basis is the Zaken saying his opinion, and on what basis are they saying theirs? Now you think of that. When Chachamim are giving a psak din, it can be based on something that they learned from their Rebbeim, or it can be that they themselves came up with something based on one of the Yudgamul Midas in Adreshes Behem. So now the Gemara is going to take up that point. Amar of Kahana, who Omer Piyashmua, Vehein Omer Piyashmua. If he says that the din, the way I'm saying it, is based on what I learned from my Rebbeim, and they're also saying me piyashmua, but we learned from our Rebbeim differently, then Rav Kahana says, Einu neharag, you would not execute him as a Zaken Mamre for that, because he has a right. He has a right to follow his Rebbeim's opinion. You can't call him Mamre. You can't call him disobedient to the Sanhedrin because of that. Who Omer. And also Rav Kahana says, also if he says this is my opinion, I came up with this shitta on my own, but they also say we came up with a different shitta on our own, then also ain't an erag, then also you can't execute him as a zokin mamre, because they both have their svara. So fine, each one's entitled to their svara. And all the more so, who aim piashmur, all the more so, says Rav Kahana, if he were to say that I have Kabbalah from my Rebbeim this way, and they're saying no, we hold differently,
no, well.
Then no, also for sure ain't an, he has every right to his Rebbe's opinion, to his Rebbeim's opinion, and they're only arguing with him based on Svara. Ad sheyoymar, so Rav Kahana says, when would he be chayav? Only if he says kachu be'enai. This is the svara that I came up with. V'heinem piyashmua, and they say no, but we learned from our Rebbeim differently. Then, if he continues to maintain his opinion and paskin the way he said, then he's going to be chayav misa. Teda,
This is not about teaching or.
it's talking about, so it's not just enough that he teaches. The Mishnah had said if he can teach however he wants, it has to be that he paskins practical halacha for himself or for others to do differently than the Sanhedrin. But now Rav Kahana is also adding a point. It would have to be that his psak din is based on his own svara that he's maintaining, even though the Sanhedrin Gedolah is telling him that we learned from our Rebbeim differently.
This is one of the groups in the Beis HaMikdash.
The
He's
Lishkas HaGaz is a Sanhedrin Gdola. He himself, we learned previously, he himself is a great distinguished Talmud Chacham, a mufla, somebody who's capable of darshaning and paskening halacha. Nevertheless, though, when the Sanhedrin Gdola says their opinion, then he has to bow to it.
But he is he is he in the best is he like
He's
is
not a member of the
it
Lishkas HaGaz himself,
oh
necessarily.
okay.
He could be from anywhere in Eretz Yisrael, but yeah, we talked about yesterday a little bit. We talked about the question. We've shown him discuss the question. The Me'iri brings up the point. Would it have to be that he's arguing with the entire Sanhedrin Gdolah, or is it enough that the majority of them vote against him? The Me'iri had said that it has to be that all of them, but on the other hand, there are other. On the other hand, the Rambam says clearly in Pirush HaMishnayos that no, it's enough if he's arguing on a majority of them. Acher Dam Lahapis, after all. Anyway, so Keda, so Rav Kahana says, I'll prove to you that it's so. That in fact, that if he argues with them where he says, I learned from my Rebbeim, then you can't call him a Zaken Mamre, Sha'arei lo hogu as Akavya ben Mahalalel, because we see they didn't execute Akavya ben Mahalalel as a Zaken Mamre. We know famously Akavya ben Mahalalel is in the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, Yisachar b'Shloshah Dvarim and all that, but we also find in the Mishnah in Eidias that he argued with the Chachamim on four halachas. One of them we learned earlier. One of them we learned earlier in the sugya, actually, they argued about a yellow discharge from a woman. Is it dam nida or not? He held yes, though. The Chacham held no. Now, the Mishnah describes over there, actually, what happened was they offered him the position of Av Beis Din if he would take back his view on those four things. Some historians explain that, well, because they didn't want an argument within the Sanhedrin, if they could help it. Some historians explain what it was is, we see from our Gemara that Akavi ben Mahalalel lived at a time when they were still doing Mrs. Beis Din. There's an interesting explanation that what it was is the Mishnah in Chagiga tells us that when Hillel first became Nasi, his Av Beis Din was first someone named Menachem. But then Menachem didn't last long. He left and went to work for the king, for King Hurdus, and then they appointed Shammai instead. So some historian, I think Dodus HaRishonim, says that may have been the time that when they offered it to Akavi ben Mahalalel. So first they offered it, either they offered it to him first and he turned it down, as the Mishnah says over there, and then they offered it to Menachem and then to Shammai, or maybe the other way around, first Menachem, then Akavi, then Shammai. Whatever it is, the point is that they offered him the position of Av Beis Din at some point if he would take back his opinion on those four things, and he said no. He said, "I would rather be," he said, "I'd rather be called a fool for my entire lifetime that I gave up such a distinguished position, rather than be called a rosha for even one moment in front of Hashem that I learned these four things from my Rebbeim and I hold this is the halacha, and I would give it up just in order to get that position."
Listen.
Anyway. Now, the point is, though, he's disagreeing with the Sanhedrin, and he continued to disagree with them afterwards.
But he
Why
passed
wasn't he a
him.
Zaken Mamre?
Did he pass him?
The Gemara apparently is assuming, Rav Kahana at least is assuming that he was actually paskening. In fact, later on, the Mishnah goes on to say that before Akavya passed away, he says to his son, "I want you to take back. I want you to start following the Chachamim in these four things." And then his son asks, "Why? You held differently?" And Akavya explains to him because like this, I learned from my Rebbeim, they learned from their Rebbeim. So fine, it's a Rabbim against a Rabbim. Each of us was entitled to our own opinion. But you, how do you know these four halachas only from me? I'm a Yochid against a Rabbim. Doesn't count. So it sounds
Teachers
like.
were also, I'm saying.
So it's in other words, because the son hadn't heard it directly from Akavya's Rebbeim. The point is, in other words, so it sounds like he was actually paskening halacha for people, and that's why he's telling his son, "Don't continue paskening halacha this way. Start paskening the way the rest of the chachamim do." Now, Rav Kahana is saying, "Why don't they execute Akavya ben Mahalalel?" On the face of it, he's paskening halacha.
But
The
he got
reason
his
must
teacher.
be. The reason must be because he said, "I learned it from my Rebbeim," and Rav Kahana says, "There you go. You see that if the Zaken is saying I learned from my Rebbeim, then you can't judge him as a Zaken Mamre."
Wow.
Yeah. Tayda Shari Lehogu, as I cover him all. Rabbi Loza says, "No, I disagree with Rav Kahana. Afilu hu oimim pi Shmua, vehein oimim kachu beinenu." No, even if he says, "I heard from my Rebbeim," and they're saying, "Never mind your Rebbeim, our Svara tells us differently." Rabbi Loza says, "Also, Nerag, even then we execute him as a Zaken Mamre." I,
Especially.
what do you mean? Their whole basis is, one second, we'll talk about Akavim and Allah.
Right.
I, their whole basis is only a Svara of theirs, and he has something that he learned from his Rebbeim. Shouldn't that outweigh that? Nope, says Rabbi Loza. Kadesh la yubu machloikas v'Yisrael. We don't want machloikas to proliferate among the Jewish people. So therefore, even if he has a reason, he's saying Mepi HaShmua, and they're saying only based on Svara, nevertheless, the Torah wants us to follow the Sanhedrin, whether he thinks they're right or wrong, he still has to be Mevatel his Das because of theirs. So in that case, Taka, why didn't they execute Akavim and Mahalalel? The reason is halacha, because they were understanding that he did not paskin halacha lemaisa. He taught that this should be the din, but he never actually paskin, for example, for a woman who had a yellow discharge, that she should be tamei. So he's only teaching that it should be that way, but therefore, he's not a zaken mamre. So the Gemara says, "Tanan, well, let's see which one of those opinions of Rav Kahana or Rav Elazar does our Mishnah fit better with." The Mishnah had said that the argument goes, "Kach darashti v'kach dorshu chaver," right? This is how I darshan from the Yud Gimel Midas, and this is how my colleagues darshan. "Kach limadti," this is how I learned. "V'kach lindu chaver," this is how my colleagues have been teaching. "My love, duhu omer v'pi hashmur." Doesn't the Mishnah mean even when he says, "I learned from my Rebbeim this way, and this is why I hold this way," and they're saying only v'pi hashmur, and therefore, and we're saying that he can be a zaken mamre. So the Mishnah then fits better according to Rabbi Lazar. The answer is, well, he doesn't have to mean that. Rabbi Kana would understand the Mishnah very easily. The other way around, Davka, when he says, "I hold that it should be this way because I came up with this drasha," and they're saying, "No, we learned from our Rebbeim differently." That's the one possibility where Rabbi Kana says he could be a Zaken Mamre. So our Mishnah does not contradict that. Okay, the Gemara says, "Toshma, let's try to bring another proof." The Amr of Yoshia, Shloisha Dvarim Sochli Zeira Me Anshe Yerushalayim. Zeira, one of the men of Yerushalayim, Me'anshe often means one of the distinguished people of Yerushalayim. So Rabbi Yoshia says he taught me three things. A soch actually means just like a conversation. It's like he wasn't even coming to teach him. They were just like having a conversation, and he mentioned these three dinim. This is the kind of thing the Gemara mentions elsewhere. Afilo sichas tamid chachamim tzricha talmud. Even when a tamid chacham says something in casual conversation, you can learn a lot from it.
Is the Zimri is small? He was
Zeira literally means small. Maybe he's haka short, but whatever. Zeira means that was the name, yeah. The first one, Baal Shemachal al Kinuyeh. Now, we talked before about the Soita, and where the husband warns the wife, "Don't be alone with this person." If he now is Moichel on that, then it's a valid Mechila. Meaning, if now she were to go and be secluded with this guy, then nothing happens. The whole Soita procedure doesn't kick off. Tosfos explains that there is a deadline to
it's
it.
a word.
Once the Megillah, once the scroll that's written with the Psukim for her is dissolved, once the ink is dissolved into the water, then at that point it's too late for him to be Moichel, because now Hashem's name has already been erased. But up to that point, he could be Moichel, and the whole Sota thing would never kick off.
But you're not supposed to do anything.
She's not supposed to be alone with this guy, but the fact is, she won't be a Sota unless there was a formal warning not to be alone. And so Zeira is saying that the husband is able to take back that warning and be Moichel on it. The second thing, ben sora remota. The second thing is similarly with a ben sora remota. We learned earlier in the Masechta all about the ben sora remota, about whether the parents warn him and he's going and stealing from his father and buying meat and wine and so on and so forth. So even after they gave him asura, and even after he got the malchus, and now he did it again, and now at this point we should have edim that make him chayiv misa. Nevertheless, at any time the parents can be moichel on it and not bring him to Beis Din for the second thing. So therefore he'll never end up actually getting executed, because it's up to them. They're not required to bring him to Beis Din for that. If they don't bring him, then there's not going to be any Missa. Now, by the way, it's an interesting point over here. Rashi had said that if she was Nistera in the case of the Soita, if she was secluded, and then she wouldn't become also to him. In other words, implying that so Rashi is not clarifying, does he mean that the husband can be moichel the kinui only before the stira? What happens if he's moichel after the stira? Would that work? From Rashi's Loshen is not necessarily so clear. Tosfos clearly says that he can do it any time until the Megillah is erased. The Rambam holds that no, he can only do that until the stira. Once the stira takes place, then the Rambam learns he can't be moichel retroactively anymore.
And moichel meaning that
Then he says that, I'm not, forget it, I don't want you to be a soita. So in other words, according to the Rambam, if he warned her and then she was alone with this person, then it's too late for him to be moichel. This has nafka minna in halacha nowadays as well, because the Gemara mentions in Soita, even though we talked before about the opinions of Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua, that they both held you need two edim for the kinui, in fact, the Gemara brings an opinion over there that you don't need two edim for the kinui. That's enough to just have the husband says privately to the wife, don't be alone with Pliny. Now, nowadays, we have no sota water. If a woman becomes a sota, then she's also to her husband forever, because there's no sota water to make her innocent. Therefore, the Gemara warns over there, and it's brought in Shulchan Aruch, a husband should never say such a thing to his wife, should never say, don't be alone with this person. Because then if she goes and is alone with him, then she becomes a sota, and then that's it. We have to stop there because we don't have mei sota nowadays. Now, the point is, if we held like Tosfos, that he could be moichel the kinui afterwards, it wouldn't be so bad, because he could be moichel the kinui and nothing happens. But according to the Rambam, he can't be moichel once the stira took place, therefore don't do it in the first place. Yeah.
And what is if he's Michael, but it still happened?
That's the
It's
thing.
still say that.
That's the thing. According to Tosfos, if he's moichel at any time before the Megillah is erased, then that's fine. Then we stop the procedure right there, and it's considered as though she was never a soita.
Even if she did do act with
If
the
she did, then
person.
it'll be up to Hashem to punish her. But yeah, as a poet, yeah. But according to the Rambam, no. Okay. So anyway, so the ben sora remota, again, they can be moichel. They don't have to bring them to Beis Din to get the to get Misa. Then the third thing that Ze'ira said, Zokin Mamre Shirotsu Beis Dinu Lim Chaloi, also by the Zokin Mamre, if Beis Din wants to be Moichel him and allow him to maintain his opinion, Moichel and Loi, then the Ze'ira had said they can be Moichel and he doesn't become a Zokin Mamre. Continues Rabbi Yoshia, Uchshabosi Eitzach Chaveirai Shabadorim. Now, when I came to my colleagues, the other Talmid Chachamim, in the south of Eretz Yisrael, and I told them what Ze'ira had told me, Al Shnayim Hoiduli, they agreed with me on two of them, about the Soita and about the Ben Sora Remota, Al Zokin Mamri Loi Hoiduli. But they did not agree about the Zokin Mamri. Beis Din cannot forgive him and not allow him to get away with it. Kadeshla Yubu Machloikas Yisrael. Again, for the same reason, because we don't want Machloikas to proliferate among the Jewish people. So we see from that, not like Rav Kahana. According to Rav Kahana, there are many cases where he could get away with it because he's saying that I learned from my Rebbeim. And even he could say that I came up with it with my own svara, and that's fine as long as they also say that there is a based on svara. In three of the four possible cases, Rav Kahana was going to exonerate him, but based on the logic of the Chachamim of Chaveira Shabadorim, no, we shouldn't allow that, because then it means that Machloikas is going to proliferate where it shouldn't. And therefore, so that's a clear contradiction on Rav Kahana, and therefore the halacha is in fact like Rabbi Elazar. It doesn't matter on what basis he's saying. Even he says, I learned from my Rebbeim. Even if they say, no, we disagree with you based purely on our own svara, nevertheless, if he doesn't give up his argument, if he doesn't give up his piske halacha, he's still going to be a zokin mamre. The only reason Akavi ben Mahalalel got away with it is because he was never paskening practical halacha. Okay. Talking about this point of machloikas among the Jewish people, so the Gemara brings Tanya, Amar Rabbi Yosi. Originally, in the time of the Sanhedrin, there was machloikas did not proliferate among the Jewish people, precisely because the Torah gives this mechanism to resolve everything. Ella, based in Shoshivim Echad Yoshim Lishkas Hagozis, the Sanhedrin Gdola of 71 would sit in the Lishkas Hagozis, Ushnei Bata Dinim Shal Esther Mashloisha, and then you had below them the next lower Bata Dinim were two of 23 each, Echad Yoshua Pesach Harabayis, the Echad Yoshua Pesach Azara, one by the entrance to the Harabayis, one by the entrance to the Azara. And then you would have Bat Dinim of 23 would be in all the other cities throughout Eretz Yisrael. As we learned in the first parak, any city that had a certain minimum population would have 120 according to the Chachamim, 230 according to Rebbe Nechemia, would have a Beis Din of 23.
So in the Shulchan they had 71
So
and
they had 70. So the highest Beis Din was 71.
71.
All the other ones were 23.
Based
Of
on
those
the
23, the next higher ones below the Sanhedrin Gdola were both in the Beis HaMikdash complex, one by the Harabayis and one by the Azara, and then everywhere else in Eretz Yisrael, you also had Bat Dinim of 23.
There's 20, there was 71, 23, and 23 in the Beis HaMikdash in
Right,
general.
right. And then throughout Eretz Yisrael. There are, by the way, there are Rishonim, I believe that Ramban holds this way, that each Shevet also had a high Beis Din of its own, and therefore, and those could have been Bat Dinim of 71. So according to that, there may not have been only one Beis Din of 71. There may have been a Beis Din of 71 for each Shevet, and then within each city there would be Bat Dinim of 23. Anyway, the point was because of the system, so now if they have to ask something of Din, the first thing is they'd go to the Beis Din in their city and see what they have to say. Im shamu, if they heard from their rabbeim an answer to the question, omer lehem, then they would tell them. V'im lav, if not, boin lozesh samoch le'iran, then they would go to the next Beis Din in the next town over. Different gusois, whether in fact we have this in the Gemara or not. One possibility is that the Rambam doesn't seem to have that, because the Rambam, when he brings this halacha in Hilchos Mamrim, doesn't bring that point that they would go to the next city. He just says they would go to the one in their city, and if not, then they would go to the one al Pesach Harabais. Okay, im shamu omalahem, if they heard, then they would tell them. Im lav, if they don't know, boin lazesh al Pesach Harabais, then they would come together to the Beis Din by the entrance of the Harabais and ask them what the story. Im shamu omalahem, if they heard from their rabbeim the answer, then they would tell them. Im lav, and if not, boin lazesh al Pesach Azara, they go up to the next higher Beis Din, the one by the entrance to the Azara. Still bought the dinim of 23.
Is not down misses or is
No,
talking
this is talking about
about
in general. They have a question in halacha. They have a question in halacha that they can't resolve.
is down misses talking about like
We're talking about the Zaken Mamre, because we're ultimately, if the Zaken, after this whole procedure, after they go and ask the Beis Din HaGadol, then the Zaken Mamre continues to disagree and to paskin differently, then we said he's Chayiv Misa. But now we're talking more generally, what was the system, Rabbi Yossi said, that they prevented Machloikas in the first place? Because they had these many, many tiers of Bati Dinim. The one who asked the question says, "Kach darashti." This is how I darshin. But kach doshu chaveira. This is how my colleagues darshin with the Yud Gimel Midas differently. Kach limanti. This is what I was teaching. V'kach limdu chaveira. And this is what my chaverim were teaching. So im shamu omer lahem, if they knew the answer, then they would tell them. V'im lav elu ve'elu boi in the lishkas hagozes. If not, then all of them would come together to the lishkas hagozes. Shasham yoshvin. And now the Sanhedrin would sit over there. Now, what times of the day would the Sanhedrin sit over there? Mitomid shal shachar ad tomid shal ben abayim. They would sit there in session from when they brought the tomid in the morning until they brought the tomid in the afternoon. That was the time when the Beis Din. That was the time when Beis Din would sit. Over Shabbos, over Yom Tovim, on Shabbos and Yom Tov, they wouldn't sit in the Lushkas HaGozis. Instead, Yoshvin b'Chel. Instead, they would sit in the Chel. The Chel was, you had the Azara, and around the Azara, between the Azara and the rest of the Hanabayas, you had an area 10 amos wide called the Chel. It has an extra degree of Kedusha beyond the rest of the Hanabayas. Goyim are not allowed to come in there, Tmeimes are not allowed to come in there. They had a fence around it called the Soreg. The fence was made out of wooden lattice work. They had signs on it warning Goyim not to come any further, not to go any further. In fact, they found a couple of those signs in archaeological digs. They have one of them, at least one of them is displayed in a museum in Turkey, because they found it during the time when the Turks were ruling over Eretz Yisrael. It's inscribed in Greek. It says basically any non-Jew is not allowed to go past this point, and if he does, then he's going to be Chayiv Misa. So in fact, that's why we find when the Greeks took over that, when the Greeks conquered and took over the Harabais, it says they made 13 breaches in the Sodig. Later on, when the Hashmonaim recaptured the Besmikdash, they fixed up those breaches, and from then on, they had a special takana that you should bow 13 times as you go around, as you pass any of those places, bow and thank Hashem that he saved us from the Greeks. Anyway, why were they so angry about the Sodig? That's one reason, because the Sodig was the limit beyond which they weren't allowed to go. So now they vented out their anger on it.
How are they going to be able to just touch about they were able to just go like this?
Because they could, they, what do you mean? I mean, they
That
fought and they conquered and
no, right? I thought literally you got Chaim Misa. Then that's
Once the Shechina went away, once
Shepherd.
Hashem is the one who's Chayim, Hashem is the
Oh,
one who makes
yes.
him Chayim Misa, but at this point, yeah. I mean, it could be the Beis Din would also.
Well, I'm saying that they came in Zion Crest.
Okay, the point is that at that point, the Shechina had left the Beis Mikdash and the Jews are fighting for their lives. So at this point, Hashem is not punishing them because he decided that the Churban is going to happen. And it's not like the Jews had the ability to do anything to them at that point. Anyway. Fine. So the Chayil then is this area 10 amos wide between the rest of the Harabayis and the Azorah, which has a special degree of Kedusha.
The last sit over there.
Yes, you're allowed to sit any place outside the Azorah. That's why we also said that the Bat Yedinim were by the entrance of the Harabayis and by the entrance of the Azorah, meaning it was right outside the Azorah so that they can sit there. Now, the point is, why were they sitting on Shabbos and Yom Tov? We said they were sitting in the Chayil. Now, why is that? Rashi gives a couple of reasons. First of all, Rashi says because a lot of people come to visit the Beis HaMikdash on Shabbos and Yom Tov. So, therefore, there wouldn't be room in the Lashkas HaGozis for all the people who want to come and ask Shilas, whereas the Chayil is a much bigger open area. Then Rashi
Yeah,
says,
Shilas on Shabbos, so
yeah,
about
they could ask Shilas on Shabbos. Sure, they still want to learn Torah.
no, not tighter, yeah, but not
No, so not
yeah.
Dine. Ah, so Rashi's second explanation is if they're sitting in the Lashkas HaGozis, Rashi prefers a second explanation. If they're sitting in the Lashkas HaGozis, then it makes it look like they're sitting to judge Dine Torah. And we don't judge Dine Torah on Shabbos. So because of that, they would sit in the Chayil, not in their normal place, to make it clear we're not sitting now as a Beis Din, we're sitting as the source of Torah for the entire Jewish people, as the teachers of Torah to the entire Jewish
I didn't
people.
realize that Torah also. I thought
Yeah.
they're just there for Paschal.
No, they're there. Shemisham Torah Yotzis L'chol Yisrael, yeah. So they would come to the Lishkas HaGozis. So again, so the Lishkas HaGozis, Sham Yeshim Tomer Shashacha, Tomer Shaman Amayim, over Shabbos V'yam Tov, Mir Shem. Yeah, the Sanhedrin Gdolah, yeah, the Gemara mentions, it doesn't mention it over here, but it mentions in other places that the Sanhedrin Gdolah is Shemisham Torah Yotze L'chol Yisrael. Torah goes to the entire Jewish people from then. When we talk about in Pirkei Avos, Moshe Kibbol Torah B'Sinai, or Masorah Yeshua, V'Yeshua L'Zkeinim, etc., and then you have the Anshe Knesset Gdolah, and then you have Yosef, and then you have a Shimon HaTzadik and Antigonus Yesoichai. Each of them, it means the Sanhedrin that was headed by that person or by that pair of people. So that's the Sanhedrin Gola. They were the teachers of Torah to the entire Jewish people. So now that's what we're saying on Shabbos and Yom Tov, they're still teaching Torah, but they didn't have the either because they didn't have room in the Lashkas HaGozis, or because you don't want it to look like they're sitting in Dine Torah, is why they would sit in the Chayil instead. So now Nishal Shela Bifneim. So now the question would be brought to them. They've gone through all the levels of Bat Yedinim below that, and nobody could give a solid answer. So now they come to the Sanhedrin Gerla. Im Shamu, if they heard from their Rebbeim what the din is, Amr Lahem, then they would tell them. V'im Lav, and if not, Oim Nim Laminyan, then they would stand up and they would go and they would vote. Rabu Amatamin Timu, if the majority said that something is that the thing is Tomei, then they declare it Tomei. Rabu Amatarin Tiaru, and if the majority declared that it's Tahar, then it's Tahar. And that's it. That's the final thing. There's no further appeal from it. And that's what we're saying now. If the Zaken Mamre disagrees with them, then he's going to be Chayav Misa.
Listen, but that's only the Paschans, right?
Only if he paskins, right. Now, so this is the system, Rabbi Yossi says, that they had because of that. Machloikas wouldn't be long-standing because anytime there was a machloikas, they would go through at any point during this whole procedure, they could go to a Beis Din which has the answer. And that's it. They would say, we learned from our Rebbeim, the answer in this case is such and such. But if they didn't, if they it went up all the way to the Sanhedrin Gerla, they would vote on the spot and they would decide what the halacha is. And that's it. That's the halacha.
What would they keep for the next day? Everything about it.
Well, no, that's by dina nefashos. If a person has to be executed by Beis Din, they would wait for the next
Do
day.
you go straight to the 71 or
No. Most of them would be judged by lower batadim. Now, on the other hand,
same process, same.
yeah, Rabbi Yossi continues. Umisharabu tamide hilo v'shamay v'hilo shleshimshu kol tzarkon. Now, what happened was, though, when the number of Talmidim of Shammai and Hillel who did not serve their Rebbeim properly increased, meaning, in other words, you have to have this learning Torah, and then the Shimush Talmid Chachamim, where you actually serve him on a personal level, and you learn from his Midas, and you learn from all kinds of things, from all kinds of unwritten things that you wouldn't learn from him necessarily in the Beis Medrash, but you learn from his Hanhogas, and you learn from everything. So that's the considered. It's not just, in other words, that you, in other words, there can be those, you learn from him, for example, the Mishnayos and things like that. Shimush Talmid Chachamim includes that you learn from him the methodology, how to learn, how to learn, how to daush, and all that kind of thing. That's not necessarily taught in the Beis Medrash. You learn it by close proximity to the Talmud Chacham for a long time. That's called Shimush Talmud Chachamim. And the Gemara mentions in some places that that's Gdoila Shimusha Yosim Limuda. Serving a Talmud Chacham is even greater than learning by him. So now Rabbi Yossi is saying, when you had many Talmidim of Shammai and Hillel, who were not Shimshu called Tzokan, who did not serve their Rebbeim properly, so therefore they didn't fully learn how to learn, Rabu Machloikas B'Yisrael, then at that point Machloikas began proliferating among the Jewish people, Venasas Torah, Kishtei Torahs, then the Torah became, made it appear as though it's two Torahs. Because up until that point, now what you had was like this. Originally we're saying there was no long-standing Machloikas at all. The Gemara Mishnah mentions in Chagiga, in the times of Yosi ben Yezer and Yosi ben Yochanan, you had the first long-running Machloikas. That a machloikas about the din of smicha on a korban on Yom Tov. Do you do it or not? There was a machloikas continued throughout the several generations after that, down to Hillel and Shammai. Hillel and Shammai themselves, it says, argued on three halachas. Besides for that one, they had three other machloikas between them. Bais Shammai and Bais Hillel now, there were, if you look throughout Shas, Bais Shammai and Bais Hillel, you find almost 300 machloikas in between them. So that's what Rabbi Yossi is saying, that now, in that generation, things started to change, and the Torah became almost as though it was two Torahs, because they're not learning Torah as clearly, and they didn't have the ability to resolve their machloikas in so easily. Because again, because they were lacking Shimush Talmid Chachamim. Now, the Rambam makes a very, very important point on this point in his introduction to Pirush HaMishnayos. Does that mean that for because of that, because they weren't Mishamish Talmid Chachamim, therefore they made mistakes and they were forgetting things, and it means, in other words, maybe they even forgot things that are halacha l'Moshe MiSinai? The Rambam says absolutely not. Anybody who says that, the Rambam says, is dover meguna ma'od, is a very disgraceful thing to say such a thing. V'udivrei misha ein lo seichel, only somebody who has no seichel would think such a thing. So the Rambam explains, no, what it means is like this. When it comes to halachos l'Moshe MiSinai, everybody agrees with them. There's no, anytime we know that something is halacha l'Moshe MiSinai, there's never any machlokas about it. What it is though, there were, we know that many halachos are learned from the Yud Gimel Midas, Sha'atoyin Nedreshes Bam. That's what the Gemara means over here, says the Rambam. There were things in which each chacham would have his own way of learning using the 13 Midas, and the result was that there were machlokas and that they couldn't resolve. But if they knew that something was halacha l'Moshe MiSinai, then that's it. There's no arguing about it, and nobody ever forgot, or nobody ever was uncertain about any of those things.
They couldn't get caught to the second one.
So part of the problem was, now the Gemara doesn't mention over here, but part of the problem was that in that time also of Shammai and Hillel, the Romans were starting to interfere with the operations of the Sanhedrin. We even find earlier in the Masechta, for example, there was a period when there were tzedukim in the Sanhedrin, actually, because they were being forced in there, and the Chachamim were not able to sit and learn with the clarity that they had before. In fact, Dodas HaRishonim gives a very interesting explanation of this piece over here. He says what it means is, when we say the Lo Shimshu Kol Tzokan, is not talking in the time of Shammai and Hillel. He says it's talking in the generation before that. You had, before Shammai and Hillel became the Nasi and the Abbasin, you had people were learning, and again, they're learning in different places. They're having to be scattered in different places because of Xerus of the Romans, of Hudus and whatever. And there was, now when Shammai and Hillel came along, they gathered the people together. From now on, instead of having hundreds of different ways of learning, you have two. You have Beis Shammai and you have Beis Hillel. So the people who are more on the tzad of Hillel, as the Alter Rebbe points out, in Igeres HaKodesh Yud Gimel, you have people whose neshamas are more from the side of Chesed. They're the kind who are more likely to want to say that something is mutter, if at all possible, and say that we're able to raise it up to Kedusha, versus you have people whose Neshama is more from the side of Gvura, who are more apt to say that this thing is off limits and you can't be Maile Tikdusha. So they gathered respectively around Hillel and Shammai, whichever one they had more of an affinity to. But the result is, in other words, Bais Shammai and Bais Hillel, he says, is not that now you have two opinions where before you only had one. On the contrary, before that you had dozens of opinions, and now they've managed to get it down to only two. But still, it was Machloikas, where before that they didn't even have that. Before that, they had the Sanhedrin is the final place to go to, and that's that.
Didn't you have like Mishnayos, like on the
They
first
had
one, yeah.
Mishnah, they had some kind of Mishnayos, but the Mishnayos were they were the core of what we now have as the Mishnah. But still, it wasn't fixed. Everybody learned it in their own. Everybody learned it in their own style, which is why we eventually have Stam Mishnah to Meir, and they argued on different things. Here we had on the whole previous sugya, we had many machlokas in that are based on how to darshan and psukim respectively. So
So
yeah.
there's no like Rabbi Yehuda Nasi didn't stay in like a pasuk in halacha
What Rabbi Yehuda
like
HaNasi
based
did
on
with
my
the
mission.
Mishnah is he gathered together all the different opinions that existed in his times, and he decided between them which one is going to be the final halacha. He and his Beis Din, we don't mean him by himself. We don't mean just sitting down there in an office. We mean he's working it out together with the Beis Din of his times. In each case, Rabbi Meir says this, Rabbi Yehuda says that, Rabbi Yossi says this. How should we record it in the Mishnah, and how should we record it in a way to establish what the halacha is?
Before then, there was not like a official
Before
halakha.
then, there was no single text of Mishnah. Every Tana would teach Mishnah in his own style.
These are just talking about the magician, like how
Yeah,
they.
different Bata Medrash.
So he differentiated between the Mishnas and the Brizos?
So Rebbe composed the Mishnah as we had, not composed, he compiled the Mishnah as we have it. He took the various versions of the Mishnayos that were floating around in the different Bate Medrash. For the most part, he picked Reb Meir's version of the Mishnayos because it was the clearest and the most succinct and made it the basis of all the Mishnayos as we have it.
And the rest became Brises.
The rest became Brises, yes. Yeah. Continues the Gemara. Mishum, from there, from the Sanhedrin Gdolah, they would keep an eye on. Again, you have to have Bate Dinim all over Eretz Yisrael. How would they determine who's suitable, who should be appointed to the Bate Dinim? Kosvin v'shochen b'chol mekaymus. They would send letters. The Beis Din HaGadol would be sending letters throughout Eretz Yisrael. Kol Mishu Chacham, anybody who's wise in knowledge of Torah, that's the first prerequisite for a person to be a member of the Sanhedrin. The Gemara, in fact, pointed out in the first perek of Or Masechta, you could have a person who has tremendous great midas and all kinds of other things, but he's not a Talmid Chacham. There's a specific one of the 613 mitzvahs. Do not appoint such a person as a Dayan. He's a great Baal midas and a Baal Tzedakah and this and that and whatever, but he doesn't know knowledge of Torah. Nothing doing. So first of all, he has to be Chacham. The Shval Ushval Berech. He has to be of low knees, meaning in other words that he's humble. He's ready to bow in humility in front of other people. V'das abrias noicha himenu, and people get along with him. He has good midas, and therefore people appreciate and unlike him. Such a person has the qualities yehei dayan be'iroi. He should be a dayan in his city. So they would write to the city, if you know of such a person in town, make sure that you appoint him one of your local dayanim. Marsha points out he has to be shval berach, he has to be humble, because that's an important prerequisite also for a dayan. That's we have in Pirkei Avos, ma'od ma'od, have a shval ruach, a person has to be very, very humble, so therefore that's an extremely important midah. So such a person would be appointed a dayan in his city. Mishum malanoisa laharabais. Eventually, he could be promoted from there to the Beis Din by the entrance of the harabais. Mishum la azara. From there, he could be promoted to the next higher Beis Din, the one by the entrance of the azara. Mishum the lishkas agozis, and from there, he would be promoted to the lishkas agozis. So, in other words, like you imagine, for example, all the chachamim that we know of. Let's say, for example, we take Hillel came from Bavel and was immediately appointed nasi. That's a bit of an unusual thing. But let's say, for example, Shammai lived his whole life in Eretz Yisrael. So you can imagine, years before that, he had been a dayan in his local city, wherever he lived. Then eventually he was promoted from one stage to another, and eventually he wound up in the Lushka Sagadis. Yeah, but Derech Klal, a person would go through these stages. Lahavdo, you have, the same way a person doesn't just come out of nowhere and become president, but Derech Klal, a person goes through. First, he's a mayor, and he's a governor, and he's a this, and a that, and whatever, and over the years he.
So how does he appoint to the 71?
So he would be appointed. So then eventually when there was a vacancy, one of the Chachamim would pass away or otherwise leave for whatever reason, then they have to appoint. There was a vacancy.
And
then, so that's the thing. So they would constantly be keeping track of who's on different levels of learning and who's on different levels of midas. Yeah. So the Gemara continues. The Gemara mentions in this connection, since we mentioned these good midas that a person should have, Shocho Mitam, they sent from there a message from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel, Ezehu Ben Ha'olam Abba, who is a person who is a Ben Ha'olam Abba. Now, Ko Yisrael, Yashal Chayuk Olam Abba, as we're going to learn in a couple of blocks, but you have certain people who are Ben Olam Abba, like in other words, they go straight to Gan Eden without needing Gehenim, without needing. So what's a person who is a Ben Olam Abba? So they sent a message as follows. Inverson, where a person is humble, or shval berach, and with his knees bent, in other words, again, well, another expression of humble, of humility. The shayif oil shayif enough. He bends down when he comes in and he goes in, and bends it down when he goes out, which is also a way of humility, like he doesn't stand himself high and proud, which the Gemara elsewhere mentions is not a good thing to do. He's constantly learning Torah. And he doesn't hold any credit for himself. He doesn't consider himself that I deserve credit for my learning and for my Maisim Tovim and everything. So here's where Marsha points out that you have the highest of all middos is to be humble, ma'od ma'od ever shvaruach, and gaiva on the other hand is the worst of all middos. So now we're mentioning now why all these expressions of humility. So Marsha explains because you can have a person who's a baal gaiva about his seichel, then you can have a person who's a baal gaiva about his physical strength, and then you can have a baal gaiva who's a baal gaiva because of his riches. So now we're saying all these three things over here: Inverson, Shval Berach, Shayif Oil, Shayif Nafik. Each of them represents that he doesn't consider himself a Baal Gaiva in any of these areas. He's a Chochma, but he's not proud of his Chochma. He's strong, but he's not proud of his Gvura. He's rich, but he's not proud of his riches. All of those he gives the credit to Hashem. And then in addition, also, he's learning Torah constantly. And then he might say to himself, listen, I was already Yotze with Kvius Itam LaTorah, so now I'm learning more than that. I deserve credit from Hashem. But he doesn't take credit. He just learns constantly without expecting any kind of credit. So though that's the kind of person who's a Ben Olam Haba. The Gemara says, when they received this message in Bavel, Yahweh Be'rabbanan, Einehen, B'rab Ula Ba'aba, the Chachamim gave a look over to Rab Ula Ba'aba because they realized he has all these qualities. You want to see a description in the flesh of a Ben Olam Haba, look at him and you'll see what this is talking about.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay. The Mishnah had said about the Zokin Mamre, Chozer Le'ir V'Shana, that if he went back to his city and he taught the way he was teaching before, then that doesn't make him a Zokin Mamre yet, only if he paskins practical halacha. So the Gemara says, Tanan Rabbanan, Eina Chayev Ad Sheyasek Hora Asay, he's Chayev only if he himself follows his own teaching, or he teaches other people, paskins to other people, and they follow his psak din.
Is that privately the problem? If he does it privately?
That's what we're going to say. Bishlema Yoda Lachinim Yasuk Koda Asay. So we can understand why if he teaches other people and they do like he taught them, fine, we can understand. Me'ikra La Bak Tolahu, until now he wasn't Chayev Misa, because he had every right to be teaching them the halacha this way. Now, when he teaches them and he tells them to do the way he was until now, and that was then the Sanhedrin Gdola told him, you're not supposed to do that, and he does, then we can understand why he's Chayiv Misa. What's wrong if he himself paskins his own if he paskins according to his own halacha? Isn't he wouldn't he be Chayiv Misa anyway if he was over on one of the things that makes him Chayiv Misa based in? Then he's anyway Chayiv Misa. The Gemara says Hatenach Hechad Ori B'Chel of Adam. Now, fine, it's easy enough to understand. Let's say till now his psak halacha was about, let's say, Chel of Adam. He held a certain kind of thing as mutter, and now the Sanhedrin has told him no, this type of Chel is aser. So fine, you can understand. So Demeikra Labak Tolahu, he wasn't Chayiv Misa in the first place because Chel of Adam are not things that involve Misa's based, and it's only Kore. Now, as a result of being a Zokin Mamre, then now he becomes Chayiv Misa. What if his original psak had been something which involved Misa's based in? If until now he was doing that, wouldn't he have been Chayiv Misa until now? Let's say, for example, he was arguing that a certain Malacha is Mutter on Shabbos. And they came and told him that, no, this thing is also as one of the Malachas. Till now he was doing it, then he's already Chayiv Misa. What do you mean he has to first go back to his city and do it, and then he's Chayiv Misa? The answer is Me'ikra Boy Hasra. The difference is originally he would have needed Hasra in order to be Chayiv Misa. Now, as a result of being of now he does not require hasra because once the Sanhedrin Gdola told him this is what the halacha is, then he disobeys, then that's it, he's chayiv misa and no further hasra is needed. The fact that the Beis Din told him differently is already all by itself the hasra. So as Gemara says, Mesis to Loiboy Astra Mayikla Memar. What about the case of a Mesis? We learned earlier in the Masechta that a Mesis is not does not require hasra. We talked earlier. We do have the word Rishonim who learned that when the Gemara says over there that a mesis, this was actually in Shlosha Prakim of Rambam today or yesterday, but that a mesis comes to somebody and says, "Let's worship Avodah Zarah." We said the person tells him, "How could we abandon Hashem and worship useless Avodah Zarah?" And then the other guy says, "I don't care. This is the important thing. We have to do it this way." Then he's chayiv misa. Does that mean that that statement to him, "How could we do this?" is what's necessary as a minimum asra, or is it that it's not really asra? It's basically that's needed in order to prompt the Edim to pay attention, to realize the Edim who are hiding behind a fence over there to know that he's going to be Mesis over here.
What officially is it?
So that's Machlokas showing him what exactly it is. But the point is, you don't need to tell him in so many words, don't be Mesis. If you do, you're going to be Chayiv Misa. You don't need that. A Mesis does not require that. So now what happens is, suppose that this Zaken was telling other people a loshen which he was arguing is not considered mesis. It's not considered telling them to worship Avodah Zarah, but the Sanhedrin Gdola says it is, that this loshen that you've been using actually amounts to telling them to worship Avodah Zarah. So now he was chayiv misa before and he's chayiv misa now, and you don't need hasra. So what's the difference between before being a zaken mamre and not now? The answer is me'ikra e omer taima mekablin minei. The difference is before, at least if he found a reason to argue that what I said is not considered to be mesis, mekablin minei, then we could accept it. And then so there's local based in would not yet be mechayiv and misa, because even if Edim come and say, he said such and such to us, then he could argue in his defense, the loshen that I said to them is not a loshen that would be considered hasasa, and therefore I'm not a mesis. So fine, he's not chayiv misa yet. But now, after the Sanhedrin Gdola told him, no, this loshen that you've been using is considered and does make you considered a mesis. And now, don't do it anymore. If he now goes back to town and starts doing it again, then he can be judged as a zaken mamre. He's going to say, but I have an argument that it's not. Tough luck. The Sanhedrin Gdola said that what you said is not, you can't be saying that anymore. And you continue to say it. Therefore, you're now a mesis. You don't need any asra. And therefore, that's it. Then.
Mesis makes a step further. That you
know. So in other words, the point is that before he was a Mesis, he didn't need Asra. But now on top of that, not only does he need Asra, but we're not going to accept any argument for him to say, yeah, but what I said is not Asra, because the Sanhedrin Gdola told him differently. And therefore, now he will be judged as a Zaken Mamre, and as the following Mishnayos are going to give the two Mishnayos from now, later on Pekesim and Aleph, which we'll learn tomorrow, as Hashem discusses, that they bring him to the Sanhedrin Gdola, and they were the ones who judge him and convict him.
Okay, Mesis over here taking this big Talmud Chacham we were speaking about now, making like a different person completely.
No, so that's the thing. We're not talking a blatant mesis where he says, for example, let's go worship Avodah Zarah. Obviously, that's a mesis, no question about that. Right. But he's saying some kind of loshen, some kind of equivocal loshen, which he's arguing it doesn't really make me a mesis. So I don't know. Let's say, for example, I don't know. He says to them, let's say, for example, he says, I don't know. I can't picture exactly what the loshen would be, but whatever. He says to them some kind of loshen, which according to him doesn't amount to actually telling them, let's go worship Avodah Zarah. And the Sanhedrin is telling him that nevertheless is still in the category of mesis. Here, I get, you know what? We have like this. Udiyu and the Masechta, we talked about, we actually had a discussion about it between the Amoraim. What happens if he says, for example, Eilech ve'evod, I will go and worship Avodah Zarah? Does that amount to being a mesis or not? On the one hand, he's saying, I will go. So that maybe just means only me, not you. But maybe it means I'll go and why don't you come along with me? So is that considered a mesis or not? So they could be arguing, let's say he says a loshen like that, for example, would that make him a mesis? So he might be saying that all this time. And every time they bring him to the local basin, every time Edom come and say, he said Eilech ve'evod, he says, yeah, but that's not hasasa. Hasasa would only be if he said Neilech ve'evod. They finally go to the basin agadol, and the basin agadol says, sorry, if you say Eilech ve'evod is also considered a mesis. Now, if he goes back home and says Eilech ve'evod, so now we're not going to accept any further excuses from him.
Either way, I'm saying should be chamis on him. He's already saying,
no, because the fact that he says Eilech ve'evod, we said before, only if he actually goes and then worships Avodah Zarah, actually accepts it as a god or something like that. And here we didn't necessarily do that, but yeah.